All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio. And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Hello, and my name is Dale Thronberry, Army veteran, helicopter pilot, chief warrant officer, many, many years ago. I want to welcome you to our program today. We've got a lot of interesting things to talk about. We've got a contest coming up that I want to remind you of shortly, and we've got our little mental health segment that we're going to have for those of you that are suffering from anxiety and so forth because of this coronavirus that's going on out there. I noticed at the beginning of the hour that there was a PSA there to help us out from the government about what we should do, and we'll talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. And then finally, later on in the program, we're going to have Dan King on, and Dan is an author, and he has written a book entitled A Tomb Called Iwo Jima. This is the 75th anniversary of the Battle of Iwo Jima, and this is a really interesting story, and Dan's been on the program before back in 2012, and this is first-hand accounts from the Japanese survivors, so we're going to look at it from a different viewpoint. I think you'll find it a very, very interesting story. I did, at least when I read it. So we're going to be doing that. But first, I always have to make sure that we thank all of our sponsors, starting off with Legal Help for Veterans, and they specialize in veterans' disability claims. So for more information, you need to go to their website. It's legalhelpforveterans.com or call 800-693-4800. Want to thank our local veterans organizations. We've got the VVA chapter, post number 3310. Never again shall a veteran coming home from battle be made to feel alone and unappreciated. VFW post 423. No one does more for veterans than the VFW. And finally, we have American Legion post 46, and that their logo or slogan is Veterans Helping Veterans, and that's American Legion Post 46. We want to thank those organizations for helping us here on Veterans Radio. You might notice that I might have skipped over something here, but I didn't really. Joining me on the line from U.S. Wings is its founder and guiding light, I guess you could say, and that's Sergeant David Hack. And Sergeant Hack, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me on.
Well,
are you still there?
I am still here.
All right.
I am still here, at least for the short term. anyway, Sarge, Sarge is the founder of U.S. Wings, manufacturer of the finest leather flight jackets in the world, and they are also a major supplier of flight jackets to the military. And I asked Sarge to come on the program because next week we are going to be giving away one of the U.S. Wings jackets. That's the A2 flight jacket. And so when I called Sarge, he said, yeah, we're going to be doing that next week, but we got more for you. So I'm going to just let you go, Sarge. What else have we got?
Well, thank you, Dale. How's it going over there anyway?
Oh, we're doing as well as can be expected. It's, everybody's kind of hunkered down and trying to stay in the house as long as they can.
Well, you and I both know the feeling about how to dig in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What we're coming out with is this. We're going to continue with the United States Army issue A2 giveaway. Mm-hmm. And U.S. Wings is the subcontractor with Excel Manufacturing of the issue A2, meaning it's the real deal. It's not a knockoff. It's not a copy. It's not a lookalike. It is actual with a DLA number inside it. And we're going to continue with that program. But we came up with something really nifty. There's a movie coming out the 1st of June, and it's called Top Gun 2, or Top Gun Maverick. And the actual patches that are supplied in that movie, what we did was we took those four patches, and they're on the CWU. We copied them mm-hmm. with their permission. And what we did was that we copied those patches with a laser high-end equipment. The equipment is pricey as can be. It's over $1 million. Mm-hmm. And we put those on leather patches identical mm-hmm. to the movie, and we're going to give away that patch set over Veterans Radio.
All right.
And there's four patches, and they're phenomenal. You can go to uswings.com and look at and see those patches and say, wow, man, that's awesome. But the neat thing about this program is we're going to give those patches away weekly. And Dale, I hate to put you on the spot, bud, but you're going to be pulling the names, okay?
Okay, we can do that.
We're going to be giving them away on Veterans Radio only. Right? They can buy those patches on our website, the patch set, for $89.95. But Veterans Radio is going to be the only company that's going to give those away. What it is you can take those leather patches and sew them on a sweater, a jacket, a coat, or anything. And they are the Top Gun set. If you go on the tube now and look at the video about Top Gun, you're going to see a CWU sage green jacket. And that jacket is exactly what we're going to be giving away as far as the patches go. And you don't have to put that on a CWU, Dale. You can put that on your own, you know, knock around jacket. You can put that on a shirt, sweater, or whatever. But it's going to be the real deal, and it's going to blow your mind. Go to uswings.com and pull up those patches now. That is what we're going to be giving away free.
That's what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Now, the neat thing about it is the only way to get those free is to listen to your station.
That's right.
Period.
We greatly appreciate that. It's another just another important reason to listen to Veterans Radio.
Exactly.
These are really beautiful patches, and I can see that I'm going to have to find a little space on my flight jacket to put those on there.
And, exactly.
You can put them on anything, but I think that anybody that's interested in aviation, of course, is going to be wanting to grab these things.
Oh, yeah. And Dale, you know, when the first movie came out, Top Gun, that was the number one movie of the year. Top Gun 2 is coming out in the 1st of June. And no one's going to have those patches. They're not going to have them unless they get them from you free, or they buy them from U.S. Wings. And why buy them when you can get them free?
That's true. Just have to tune in every week. We're going to pull a different name every week. All you have to do is, actually what we'll do is we'll have people go to our website and click on the U.S. Wings logo that's at the bottom of our first page, and just add your name to the list, and we will pull a name off every week, and then every 3 months we'll also be giving away one of those A2 jackets.
The military issue A2, you know, the real thing. Plain and simple. By the way, I'm going to throw this in here.
Stuff, guys.
For a little history's sake, Bernard Carrick is a friend of ours. Bernard Carrick was our first customer that wore the Army A2 military issue jacket. Now, who is Bernard Carrick? He is the former police commissioner of New York City that stood up and was accounted for at 9/11.
That's right. Yep. I thought the name sounded very familiar.
He is the man, and his son is the guy that drove that SWAT car into the building when those guys was killing these people a month ago, and jumped out of his car and took two of them out.
Wow.
Yeah.
It doesn't go far from the family, right? From the father and the son.
It doesn't. And by the way, he wears one of our jackets also.
Well, he should do that. All right, folks. So I want to make sure that you do this. So go to the U.S. Wings website and check out the jackets and patches, and then come on back to veteransradio.net and sign up. You get the opportunity to win one or both of all these things for you. And I got a feeling we're going to have more things coming up from U.S. Wings as we go along during this year. So, Sarge, I want to thank you very much for being on the program. This is a great opportunity for our listeners out there to get some really amazing military gear, and not just jackets and patches, but you go to U.S. Wings, they got pretty much everything that you want there for you, anybody who's interested in military accessories and clothing. So thank you very much, Sarge. We'll be talking to you soon.
Dale, welcome home, and make sure you keep your hands clean.
I'm sitting here right now with my hands dipped in sanitizer. thank you very much.
So am I. All right, bye now.
Bye-bye. All right, so that's the giveaway for the week is starting next week. Number one, we'll be giving away the jacket, the A2 jacket, and we'll also be giving away these patches, leather patches for your other jackets that are tied to the Top Gun movie Maverick coming out in June. So make sure that you go to US Wings and check all this stuff out. I want to take a real quick break right now. Oh, no, wait. I just got something handed to me. There it is. All right. Attention, World War II veterans. This is kind of the theme we have going today. There is a special program coming up on May 8th at the American House in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. And this is a celebration of the end of the war in World War II in Europe, VE Day. And what we're looking for, we are looking for World War II veterans. And it doesn't make any difference if you served in Europe or wherever you served during World War II. We want to honor you. And so we're asking that you give us a call or have someone give us a call here at the number is special number 248-912-3237. That's 248-912-3237. This is for all World War II veterans, probably in the Southeast Michigan area. I know that there are a couple of thousand, hopefully more than that out there still. And this is running on May 8th from 12 to 3. And it's going to be at the American House in Dearborn Heights, Michigan. And we want to, if you have a relative who's a World War II veteran, your grandfather, great-great-grandfather, uncle, whoever it may be, give us a call and sign them up so that we can prepare and have special gifts for them on that day. Again, that number is 248-912-3237. We're going to take a real quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by our mental health expert here on Veterans Radio, and that's Melissa Engel. And we're just going to talk about how we can kind of maybe calm ourselves down over this coronavirus and see what we can do to make ourselves feel better, maybe take care of a few of our friends and so forth. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We're back on Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry. I am an Army veteran, and we want to welcome you to our program. And joining me on the line right now is our good friend and counselor, Melissa Engel. And Melissa, real quickly, is a licensed professional counselor working in Michigan. She's been working with veterans since 1998. She's currently completing her PhD program at Oakland University here in Michigan, and she has recently opened her own private practice. So, Melissa, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. It's great to be back.
It's great to have you. How are you doing?
We're all hanging in here over at our house.
I know. Everybody's hanging around in their house. It's a good place to be.
Living in our PJs, yeah.
Yes. Well, I asked you to come on the program because we've been getting a lot of news and information, and some of it's true and some of it's not. And I've noticed in talking to some of my Army and military buddies that they're getting anxious over what's going on, and I just wanted to have you on to think maybe you could help kind of talk them down a little bit and see what you could recommend that, so they could calm down.
Yeah, absolutely, Dale. Thanks. Well, let me first just begin by normalizing that during a time like this of national crisis or pandemic, it's absolutely normal for all people to experience anxiety and worry and discomfort. So if you already have pre-existing problems with post-traumatic stress or anxiety or depression, what as mental health professionals we expect to see is what we call an amplification of that or an increasing of the symptoms. So just to give you an example, Secretary of the VA Dr. Wilkie indicated that the Veterans Crisis Line has experienced a 12% increase in calls, and 20% of those are COVID-related. So it's definitely measurable and palpable, and I see it in my practice, and I see it in the veteran community that I interact with. So the first thing I just kind of want to cover is it's okay to be anxious and nervous about this. It's a normal reaction, and there are definitely things that we can do. But first, let's just talk about, like, why is this stressful, or why is this feel harmful to some folks? And primarily what we see is you have an increase in isolation. Not everybody lives with other people, or if they do live with other folks, those relationships might be strained. So being limited in where you can go, or having chronic medical conditions that make you feel like you might be more susceptible to get this illness, or it may hit you harder. You might be afraid of those kind of medical consequences. And some of the things that you used to be able to do that you enjoyed in order to relax and cope, maybe you're not able to do that anymore. I know one of my friends, he loves to bowl, and now he can't go bowling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we used to go to the range, me and my partner, and now we can't go to the range because even the outdoor ranges are closed. So it's really, you know, a change of lifestyle that most people weren't really prepared or expecting. So what I want people to sort of take away from how to get better or how to deal through this is think about it in a very simple way. Your stress is increasing, so what you want to do is find things that you can add to your daily routine that decrease your stress. That's going to be different for each of us. For some folks, it might be some type of self-care activity. So maybe, you know, taking a nap, taking a bath, going for a walk, getting some exercise, doing some yoga, reading a book, any of the things that you personally enjoy, whatever those activities are, we should be building and scheduling those into our day, and we should be creating some sort of structure. Most people do better when they know what's going to happen and when and what to expect. Certainly kids at this time in our homes, they're going to do much, much better if we maintain some sort of structure. So having a schedule where you get up, maybe you eat breakfast, you do some light exercise, you do something fun, go do work stuff, or business stuff, and then plan some more time to take care of yourself. Seeking help is really, really important. I will say that I've been really impressed with Governor Whitner's response to this crisis. What she's done is she's allowed basically telemedicine in a way that we've never seen it authorized before. So if you had a therapist or if you're looking to go to therapy, you can still access that and start that process right now through telehealth portals. So if you're concerned and you want someone to talk to, the help is there. Good news is that the VA is still providing essential mental health services. So don't think that just because maybe your physical therapy appointment has been canceled that you can't access mental health care. You can, by either contacting your social worker or your provider at the VA, or by calling the crisis line and getting yourself connected if you're a VA that's eligible for those services. If you're not eligible for those services and you have private health insurance, most of the major healthcare providers right now have waived all of their co-pays and deductibles for mental health services in the state of Michigan. So Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, Humana, a lot of them, if you go to your health insurance page, you'll see an alert that says, like, what we're doing about COVID. You click on that, and it'll tell you if your insurance company has waived those co-pays because they recognize that. We're preparing to have a mental health emergency on top of a physical disease emergency. So we want people to get into care now before it gets worse, because most of the time, folks will wait till it's much, much worse or unbearable before they reach out for help. And just with everything that's going on, that's not the way to do it. So take care of yourself. Seek help if you want those services. Folks can email me right there from the Veterans Radio page if they want specific information or if they have a particular question. I'm more than happy to help them out. I'm also seeing clients in office and by telehealth at my private practice. So I'm happy to give them that information if they reach out to me through the page there on veteransradio.net. And just some other general pieces of advice. Now's a good time to call that buddy who you haven't talked to in 8 months or 2 years or 5 years. Now's a good time to reach out and see how other people are doing. Sometimes reaching out to someone or looking out for a neighbor can help you feel like you've got control over the situation and that you're doing something about it, not only for yourself, but for other people. So reach out and seek help, but also provide help if you're in a position to do so. The other piece of advice that's really important right now is limit your exposure to news, TV, and social media. You're watching the news cycles 24/7. That title on the screen says breaking news, and immediately our blood pressure goes up. So what we need to do is stay informed, but pick a particular time. What I've been doing, I get up in the morning, I check the news, and I read an article about what's the latest, what's important, what's relevant that I need to know, and then I shut it down for the rest of the day.
Good thinking.
I let go of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to terrify you and upset you more if you're plugged into it. If you're going on your social media feeds, there's conspiracies and people are arguing politics, and now is not the time for any of that energy to be kind of like in your space. So what you have to do is, if you're going to use social media, use it to connect to people in positive ways, to check on them, to see how they're doing. Use it to watch funny videos on YouTube of silly cats or whatever will kind of get your mind off of things. And then just the last thing I would say is try to regulate your sleep, your exercise, and your nutrition. So walking outside, if you can do that, or walking around the house, if you don't feel comfortable going outside, trying to go to bed at the same time, not drinking more pop or more pots of coffee every day, you know, because that just becomes a vicious cycle. And then trying to eat healthy. You've got more time at home to prepare meals, so now is the time to get out that cookbook and try some recipes and just do things with your family and friends and reach out if you're struggling, because there's a ton of resources. In fact, there's more now than there's probably ever been in our state. So I'm really, really happy to see that providers are donating services, insurance companies are waiving deductibles. And if you're not sure about telehealth or telemedicine or getting care over the internet, I'm telling you, it's super easy. I send you a link as a therapist. You click on it at your appointment time, and boom, we're FaceTiming back and forth, and it's secure and it's encrypted. And you can do it from a mobile phone, or you can do it from your computer. So there's no software downloads. It used to be a lot more complicated 5 or 10 years ago to do telehealth or telemedicine, but now things are getting much easier and much more user-friendly. So don't let a little fear or uncomfortableness of technology persuade, again, from getting help when possibly you could get the help right now from your living room, which would be amazing.
Right. That's great information, Melissa, and that's the reason I asked you to come on the program. I got an email from my dentist who was canceling an unnecessary or not essential thing he was going to do on me, which was fine with me. But he says that it's imperative that we all work together to be cautious and provide our bodies with the correct nutrients in order to help it withstand corona and other viral infections. Number one, he recommends vitamin A and C, as well as maintaining hydration, can help support our immune systems.
Absolutely. And as our stress levels go up, our immune system response and capabilities go down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an absolute essential thing to deal with this stress. If you're walking around feeling way more stressed out than normal, you need to be doing things to combat that, or you'll be more likely to get sick, and you'll be more likely to have complications with it.
Right.
So stress and disease and the link of that has been really strongly connected and understood for a long period of time. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about being happy during this time. It's about taking care of yourself so that you can stay well and be there for the future.
Right. And that's the ultimate goal. Be there for the future.
Yes.
So thank
absolutely.
You. Thank you, Melissa, very much. I greatly appreciate that. I want to have you on again sometime in the near future to talk about some of the post-traumatic stress therapies and treatments that you've been talking about recently on your social media.
Oh, yeah. I've got some new techniques and therapies. And what we're seeing for the first time in over 20 years as a clinician in my practice is people recovering from post-traumatic stress disorder completely within 5 sessions.
Oh, we'll have to talk about that.
Radical, yeah.
I will be in touch then very shortly.
Yeah, I'd love to talk to you about it in the future. That'd be great, because that's helping veterans, and, that's my passion.
I know. All right. Thank you, Melissa. We'll be talking
to
you soon. That was Melissa Engel. And you can contact her if you want to by going to the Veterans Radio website. There's information about Melissa on there. Or you can just email her through our email system, and that is melissa@veteransradio.net. So I would encourage you to do that. She's very helpful, and she's very understanding, it seems like. I just wanted to finish up what my dentist, Dr. Singleton, sent me. In addition to the vitamins A and C and maintaining hydration, he says, like you've been hearing all over. Just stay at home if you're sick. Wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. That's about a verse of Happy Birthday. Wash your hands with soap and water, as I mentioned. Use at least a 60% alcohol-based hand sanitizer if soap and water are not available. Avoid touching your face. Cover your nose and mouth with a tissue or your sneeze or cough into your elbow when coughing and sneezing, and practice social distancing. Unfortunately, that's what we have to do right now. Hopefully soon this will all be behind us and we can get back to normal. And as we, all many of our grandparents always said, this too shall pass, and it will. And so we want you all out there to take care of yourselves and your families, and keep your hands clean. Stay away from your face, all right? We're going to take a real quick break right now, and when we come back, we've got Dan King on, and we're going to be talking about the Iwo Jima. We're going to be talking about a tomb called Iwo Jima, and looking at that battle from the Japanese side. And I think you'll find this really interesting. So stick around, and we'll be right back after this real short message.
Hey, I'm Willie Nelson.
Thousands of veterans are living on our streets right now, where they're being robbed, beaten, and even killed. And if this happened behind enemy lines, we'd be outraged. So please help us get our veterans into safe, permanent housing. Donate any amount at veteransmatter.org. Or you can text VET to 41444. They fought for us, and now we fight for them. Veterans Matter.
We're back on Veterans Radio, and I am your host, Dale Thronberry, and I am an Army veteran, and we are going to be talking now with our good friend, actually, Dan King. And Dan has written a book entitled The Tomb Called Iwo Jima, First-Hand Accounts from Japanese Survivors. But first, I want to bring Dan on and say, hi, Dan, how are you doing?
Thanks, Dale. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I am sorry I didn't get you on a little bit sooner, but I thought we had some information we needed to get out to our listeners.
Yes, sir, very interesting. Very informative.
See, that's what we do here at Veterans Radio, and now we're going to inform people about a story that I bet they didn't even think about. I hadn't thought about it until I read your book, Dan, in all honesty. You know, we always think about all these conflicts that we're involved in wherever it happens to be, and we never really think about the other side because we've been trained that they're the bad guys.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
And which you have to do that, I mean, anyway, mm-hmm. to in order to fight them. But let's talk about this story and how you got interested in the tomb called Iwo Jima.
Well, I think it started with my own trip to Iwo Jima in 2001 with the Iwo Jima Association of America. And, you know, I'd read about the battle and I'd watched all the movies and TV shows and things. But it was an eye-opening experience to actually walk on that black sand and walk around that island and see what a horrible place it must have been to fight. So small and so rocky. And it gave me a new respect for the Marines and the Army soldiers that landed and fought on Iwo Jima. And I think the idea to write a book began in 2006. I was going through chemotherapy at the time. I had cancer, and a friend of mine in Japan sent me a book that I could read, you know, in the hospital. And it was written by a man named Tsurugi Akikusa, who was sent to Iwo when he was 17 years old as a naval radio man. So I read that book and I thought, amazing, this guy went through so much and he survived the battle and became a POW. And I just wanted to write him a letter to say, hey, thank you for writing this book. It encouraged me because I was kind of going through my own battle at the time, you know, with the chemotherapy and everything. And my dad had been a POW in the Korean War. And a lot of experiences were similar to the ones my dad kind of had, you know. Mm-hmm. So I wrote him a letter, and he wrote back. And, you know, I read, write, and speak Japanese. Of course, I wrote him in Japanese. And he wrote back to me and said, you know, best wishes. I hope you recover from the cancer. And when you recover, please come to Japan. I'd like to talk to you. I'd like to, you know, show you around. So long story short, I recovered. I went to Japan. I interviewed him and talked to him, and I said, I need to tell this guy's story in English for the Americans to read, because it's truly incredible. So he's basically the main character in the book, A Tomb Called Iwo Jima.
Right.
And in the course of my trips to Iwo, I've been 12 times since then as a volunteer translator for our annual trips we take in March, where we have the joint U.S.-Japan memorial service on the island where Japanese survivors and children and grandchildren of survivors meet with Americans, and we have a joint service to honor the dead from both countries.
That's kind of unusual, isn't it? I mean,
it's very interesting to see. Okay. And the amount of respect that both sides show each other.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to distract you there on that. I just thought it was rather interesting that both sides in a battle would get together and honor the ones that did not come home.
It's truly amazing to see that level of mutual respect that both sides have for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And when we take our survivors, our Iwo Jima veterans, Navy, a Marine, and a couple of Army guys have gone so far, and they'll meet the wives or the children, usually widows or orphans of Japanese soldiers and sailors who were killed. But over the course of all those trips, I met more and more of these Japanese. And I started going to Japan to interview them in person, in their own language, in their own homes, to find out what they went through. And it was just amazing what I was able to discover by talking to these people.
Yeah, I can. I understand that now. My dad was on Iwo Jima. He was in the Coast Guard, though. I mean, he wasn't in the battle itself. He drove one of those. What did he call them? Long, slow targets, an LST. Onto the beach and opened it up and let everybody out to get on the beach. In fact, we have a picture of that. I might have to put that up on Facebook later on.
I'd love to see that.
To show what it was like. And this was a couple of days after the battle started.
Mm-hmm.
But my fascination with this story was the training that these Japanese soldiers and sailors and pilots and everything went through was so similar to what we did.
Oh, okay.
And it's not that, that they were the same, but again, I was looking at it, I guess, from some sort of ethnocentric type of viewpoint that, well, you know, they just went out and, you know, they were all infantry guys and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they were going to schools to learn, you know, Morse code and to learn to fly and to learn artillery and everything else like our advanced training would be for anybody in any form of the military. And that's what really got my attention with this is the amount of training that they went through and how personal you made each of these characters.
Well, that was something that, you know, as a child, you know, I looked at the Japanese as just, you know, whack-a-mole, pop-up targets to shoot at in the old war movies, right? And we played Army Man when we were kids, you know. And then as I grew older and I met these people and I talked to them and I found out that they were people just like we were. And a lot of them would say, you know, I'm not angry at the Americans for killing my dad or my grandfather or my husband or my brother. They were just doing their duty, and they were, you know, trying to protect their country. And they all say that their dads and brothers and fathers were doing their duty, trying to protect their country, as they were told. And it seemed to me that we had a lot more in common than we were led to believe in, you know, books and movies.
And I think that's very true. I've talked to a number of Vietnam veterans who have gone back to Vietnam and have run into people that were, you know, either Viet Cong or North Vietnamese, and they say that sort of bonding that all warriors have comes through, and the politics are pushed to the side, and you just talk about what you did and how brave they were and how brave you were and so forth.
You know, that's a good point about the Vietnam, is that a lot of the Japanese said the same thing, is that after the war, when they came home, they were treated very poorly, and they were called baby killers, they were called murderers, and they were, you know, people told them, hey, you caused this war, look what happened to our country. It was destroyed, devastated, all the cities are burned down.
Mm-hmm.
And so these privates and corporals come home, and they're told that they started the war, And when they tried to talk about their experiences or talk about the war, they were told to shut up. No one wants to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So these guys just clammed up for decades and never talked about the war. And just as, you know, as they were approaching the end of their lives, they started to talk more, but people didn't want to listen. So I was really lucky because I come in and I'm not a relative. I'm not a friend. I'm a stranger, and you can tell me anything you want, and I'm not going to judge you. And so I said, I promise I will tell your stories as you tell them to me. I'll put them in English, and I will tell them exactly how you tell them to me. I'm not going to edit things out. I'm not going to add anything. I'm trying to tell the truth of what you experienced. And these guys told me some really amazing stuff.
Well, let's talk about a couple of them. I'll let you choose the characters you would like to discuss.
Well, we had one thing that was really interesting. You know the movie Letters from Iwo Jima, right, with Clint Eastwood? I worked as a researcher for that film. And, you know, that kind of struck me is that the Japanese really love that movie. And on one of our trips, when we arrived on Iwo Jima, we went to the aircraft hangar, and we're sitting down, and there was this gigantic Japanese flat-screen TV, and they're playing the movie for us, Letters from Iwo Jima. And we walk in, and we sit down, and there's like, ba-ba-ba, you know, gunfire and explosions, and Japanese are dying. And I look over at this Japanese naval officer, and he's like smiling approvingly, like, yeah, we like this movie too. I thought, wow, didn't expect that. And they love the Clint Eastwood movie so much in Japan that the emperor gave the director a Rising Sun Third Class neck ribbon. He awarded him a Japanese medal.
Goodness.
And thanking him, because this rose, the awareness in Japan was kind of disappearing about World War II, right? And they have the whole kind of like, you know, yeah, right, boomer concept in Japan as well. They don't want to hear the old people's stories, right?
Okay.
And so this Clint Eastwood film brought back to the forefront how important this battle was for both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that in mind, I got an email from a guy in Florida who said he found some letters in a trunk at a flea market, and they were in Japanese, and he wanted to know what they said. So he sends me pictures. I look at them. I can instantly tell they're Iwo Jima related. So I asked the guy, I said, hey, why don't we try to return these? And he agreed. His name is Rex Butler. And so Rex said, yeah, let's try to find the family. And we did. And we found in Nara, there's a family of First Lieutenant Gen-ichi Hattori, who was in charge of an anti-tank unit at the foot of Mount Suribachi. His anti-tank guns did a lot of damage to our tanks that were trying to cut across to the other side. He was with the 10th Anti-Tank Battalion. But he was killed on February 22nd, around 2 in the morning. And what was really interesting is I went to the family's home, and I shared the stories, and gave them the letters. And the letters had mentioned his daughter, Chikako. And his letter was saying, you know, are you getting enough to eat? And is our baby getting enough formula? You know, are you getting enough coal to heat the house? Right. Things that a dad would say.
Right.
Things that a husband would say. Just mundane, ordinary things. But the family was so grateful to get these letters back because they never saw their dad, you know, their brother again. He was gone, disappeared on Iwo Jima. But then they had these letters that finally made it home. And there's a bit of a ghost story attached to these letters. Is that Hattori's mother kept a journal every day. And on February 22nd, she woke up in the morning and she wrote an entry saying, I saw my son rushing towards me, waving a sword over his head, covered in blood, and screaming.
Oh, no.
She wrote that in her log. After the war, about 17 years later, this guy, Gen-ichi Hattori's commanding officer, starts making the rounds across Japan to all his subordinates because he survived the war and became a POW. And to make amends, he was going to each one of his subordinates' homes, apologizing to the families for losing their son. So he comes to the Hattori household in Nara, and he apologizes. And Hattori's mother says, I want to show you something. So she comes back. She shows him her diary. And he says, yes, he was killed at 2 a.m. on February 22nd. And he led an attack of 5 men out from our bunker. And he pulled a sword, and that's the last thing we saw, was him leading this group of 5 guys out of the bunker. And it was weird. Wow. How did she know that the exact time of death? And it matched up perfectly. Is it like a mother's intuition? Or did his spirit really come to visit her in a dream? It's one of those inexplicable things that we don't have an answer for.
No, but wow.
Mr. Hattori. So, yes. And then another guy I'd like to share a story about is Mr. Nozaki. Mr. Nozaki was a radio man gunner on a Betty bomber. And mm-hmm. they dropped bombs over Iwo on February 24th at night. And on one of the trips, we had him with us in 2009. So Goji Nozaki went to Iwo Jima with us, with the Iwo Jima Association of America. And one of the veterans we took with us was Cy O'Brien. He was a combat correspondent with the 3rd Marine Division. And so I was kind of translating for these two guys. You know, they're trying to talk to each other. And Mr. Nozaki and Cy, are, you know, when were you on the island? Oh, yeah, when were you on the island? They're talking, right? And then Cy says, hey, were you one of those bombers that dropped bombs on us on February 24th? And Nozaki-san said, I'm so sorry. If I don't know it was such a nice guy like you down there, I wouldn't drop bombs on you. And Cy says, believe me, if we'd known that guys like you were in the planes, we wouldn't have shot at you. And they shook hands, and these guys, they hugged. And it was one of those things where they both realized that of all of us on the island that day, very few people had actually been there during the battle. Mm-hmm. And these guys, they were mortal enemies at the time, but somehow they'd become pals because they had both experienced something, you know, really horrible, and it brought them together. And you couldn't break them apart. They were trying to share stories and talk. And you know, if anyone listening, if you're on that trip and you remember Cy O'Brien, you know what a wonderful guy he was.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Throughout the book, I have to get back to what we're talking about here. I'm talking with Dan King, and he's the author of A Tomb Called Iwo Jima, which is available pretty much everywhere. And I really encourage those of you who are history buffs out there, especially World War II history buffs, or, you know, you just want to know about the differences between cultures and so forth, that you read this book, because it was really eye-opening to me about the Japanese culture itself and the rituals that they went through when they were being drafted, just like they were being drafted here.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, you know, trying to figure out how they could avoid the draft, or did they go straight into the service, and what branch of the service did they want to go into. And they do all this training, and then they get assigned to something that doesn't require their training. And it was just so reminiscent of so many stories that I've heard in doing this program.
Yeah. You know, I've got another ghost story for you.
Okay.
On that first trip in 2001, when I went to Iwo Jima, I was wearing the Marine Corps HBT uniform I'd gotten as a gift from the Wind Talkers. I worked as a Japanese consultant on that film, a technical consultant. And I thought it'd be fun to wear the HBT uniform to Iwo Jima in 2001 to honor our Marines. And so I was talking to a couple of the Japanese naval officers who are stationed on the island. They've got a couple hundred of the Japanese Maritime Self-Defense Force guys who are stationed there. And I approached a couple officers, and I was talking to them. And then one of them says to the other, he says, wow, he looks like the ghost down on the beach. And I said, well, what ghost? He goes, yeah, he does. Yeah, the ghost. I said, what ghost? And, you know, these are naval officers. They're not pulling my leg. They're not, you know, trying to, you know, prank me or anything. And he says, yeah, you can see on foggy nights, right at sunset, when the mist comes in, the water, the waves are rolling up on the beach down by Suribachi there. He says, you can see a lone Marine walking towards us, walking towards the airfield. And he's right at the water's edge. And you can see he's got his camouflage helmet covered. He's looking down. And you can see his hand is on his right shoulder like he's holding a rifle. And he doesn't have any legs. And he's like floating towards us. And just as you can kind of make out his features, he just disappears. And I was like, whoa, this is shocking. There's the Japanese believe that there's a Marine there looking for his buddies. And he walks the beach, not every night, but once in a while, you'll catch a glimpse of him.
Goodness.
And On another trip, one of the young Japanese sailors came up to me, and I noticed his name tag, and I read his name in Japanese. He was surprised that I could read Japanese, and we started talking. And, he was from a town that I lived in Nagoya. I spent 10 years there. So he says, hey, excuse me, King-san, I noticed that all you Americans, you go down to the beach and you gather up all the sand and you put it in bottles and bags and you carry it with you. Why do you do that? And I told him, I said, well, you know, this is sacred soil to us. This is holy ground. This volcanic ash is soaked with the blood of our, you know, our dads and brothers and uncles and grandpas. It's got their blood and their tears and their sweat, and this is sacred. We take it home to give to our friends and family so they can share with it. And so he looked at me, and he looked really puzzled. He said, I guess I can understand that. I said, well, you guys do it too, right? He said, no. We make sure we don't take any sand back with us. In fact, when we get on the planes to go back for our, like, R&Rs, we knock our boots to make sure that not one grain of sand goes back with us. Because we believe the sand is haunted. If you take any sand with you back to your parents' house or your house in Japan, the ghosts will tag along with you.
Goodness.
And it'll cause illness and injury and harm and things. So the Japanese living on Iwo Jima, they put out bottles of water by their beds at night to pacify the thirsty spirits. Because in Japanese culture, they sincerely believe that the Japanese dead who are still trapped on Iwo in those bunkers and tunnels, that their spirits can't be released to go to heaven because they have not had the Buddhist ritual of cremation. And so what they're really trying to get all those bones out of the bunkers and tunnels, they're looking for them now, you know, 75 years later, they're still looking for them. And when they find them, they hold a cremation ceremony, and they chant Buddhist mantras, and they take the cremated remains back to Japan, and they're put in this kind of estuary near the Asakuni Shrine. And they believe until the man's bones have been found, prayed over, cremated, that he wanders the earth in a state of thirst and hunger. And it's, if you think about it, that's really sad to think that way.
It is. And I have to, again, remind our audience, we're talking with Dan King here. His book is A Tomb Called Iwo Jima, and I have to let the audience know that you gave me a little bag of Iwo Jima sand the last time you were on the program.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And it's in a pronounced spot, I guess would be the term.
Yeah.
Prominent spot, that's what I'm saying. Prominent spot in my little studio at home. And it's right next to a picture of my dad. And so it's very meaningful to me. And I know it is to the other people that I know that are sons and daughters of Iwo Jima veterans.
Mm-hmm. It's sacred soil. It's holy ground. And if you ever get a chance to go and you walk on that beach, it changes you.
I can only imagine.
Especially your dad was there, too. I mean, what a brave man to pilot those boats.
I
launching motors and machine guns. I just can't imagine.
I don't think it was his plan, but...
That's bravery right there.
But the idea of just being on the beach itself is something that is quite astonishing to me. Can we talk a little bit more about some of the Japanese that you researched, that you had the opportunity to talk to?
Mm-hmm. Well, I talked to the widow of a man who was killed on Iwo Jima, and her name is Teruko Abe. And she was born and raised in current-day North Korea, which was governed by Japan at the time. But it was part of the Korean Empire. It was called Joseon. And she joined the Red Cross as a nurse. The war breaks out. She gets sent to China, and she gets enlisted into the Japanese Army as a nurse. And she meets a man who is injured at a hospital she's working at in Tianjin, China, which the Japanese controlled at the time. And she falls in love. They get married. They have a couple of daughters. Life is wonderful. He gets recalled back into the Japanese army, sent to Iwo Jima. And he was with that unit that was firing those large trash can mortars, the 320-millimeter spigot mortars. And he never came home, and he was killed. And so I met her on the island one year, and I went to her home to interview her, and she came many times. And she gave me this little bell, if you can hear that, if it's coming through or not. But she makes these little good luck charms, and she would give them to our Iwo Jima veterans that come to the island each year. And first year she made about 10, and then she made about 20, and then 30, and then she made 100. And so far she's made roughly 900 of these little bells. And it's two clamshells that are glued together, and she says that means hands gathered, you know, in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And she covers them with silk kimono material, and she sews on a little bell and a string. And she says, I pray over each one of these little bells that I make, and I pray that the wearer, whoever has it, will be safe from harm and injury and illness. And she lost her husband in the war, her dad in the war, and her brother in the war. Her brother was killed at Wake Island. And, you know, if anyone that I could meet, they would hate me as an American, it would have to be this lady.
You would think, right?
You would think, right? And she raised two daughters working a sewing machine in a widow's home for 20 years after the war. She had a pretty rough life. And yet, this is one of the most kind, loving, gentle people you ever meet. And so, at one of these visits to Iwo Jima, I said, Mrs. Abe, come here, I want to introduce you to someone. So I grabbed her hand, we went over to the former commandant, James T. Conway, and I said, you know, General, this is Mrs. Abe. I gave him a brief story, and they took a picture together. And to me, that was a great symbolism of how, you know, the U.S. and Japan have overcome all the hatred that we had in, during the war. And at Iwo Jima, it was brutal. We're now great trading partners. We're great military allies. We're friends in commerce. You know, we're cultural friends. And we've been able to overcome so much so quickly. So I passed out these bells, and, you know, whenever I look at mine, I've got mine here on my desk. I think of her, and I just think, you know, there's no room for hatred.
Right, right. Can you give us a little bit of an idea of the, I hate to say this, the body count, I guess you could say, of Americans versus the Japanese? Because I know the Japanese were taught, you know, that they never surrender.
Oh, yes. You know, that's, it's a funny thing, is all the Japanese army and navy soldiers and sailors were instructed that their life is lighter than a goose down feather, but their duty to the emperor is heavier than a mountain range. And this is an expression that every Japanese person over the age of 80 can recite like that instantly. They all know it. And they were told that to become a prisoner, either by choice or if you're wounded and captured, if you're knocked out, whatever reason, your first duty was to kill yourself, to take your own life, so as not to bring shame on your family name.
Mm.
You know, we often talk about Japanese culture with honor, right? It's very serious. As you don't want to shame your family crest, your family name. And families go back, you know, 1,000 years.
That's correct, yes.
And you trace their roots back 1,000 years. And people don't move around like we do. They stay in the same town for hundreds of years, and everyone knows everyone. And so if you are captured, what would happen is in the town hall, they have everyone's records, right? You know, you're the son of this guy, and you're the son of this guy. Like in, like in the Bible, they have all the, you know, generations going back. And the first thing they would do is they would go to that POW's name, and they'd draw two red lines through it. It means you cease to exist. Person non grata. You're out.
Oh.
And so that would, then what would happen is the cultural stigma is, you know, your neighbors know that you're a POW. You surrendered. You're a coward.
Oh.
And your children or your siblings or your other relatives have a hard time in school or getting jobs. It's really a big deal. So these Japanese, rather than become POWs, because they love their families, they didn't want to bring shame on their families, and they didn't want to show cowardice, they would kill themselves. And they told me, Mr. Omagari, he was Lieutenant Satoru Omagari, he told me that it was just common sense to kill yourself rather than be captured.
Mm-hmm.
And his story is actually in the movie Letters from Iwo Jima. There's a scene where he crawls out, if you recall the movie, he crawls out amongst all these dead Japanese corpses with an anti-tank mine, and he tries to blow up a Sherman tank as it comes by. And, you know, he told me that story, and I was just amazed at the mindset that those guys, they were just, you know, he literally said, "We were brainwashed," is what he said.
Oh, sure, sure.
And, you know, this is something Mr. Akikusa told me. Mr. Akikusa said the same thing, as we were brainwashed. We didn't know that we were living under this fascist ruler, this empire, until after the war. And they were told that if they were ever captured, the Americans would torture them in horrible, vicious ways. And that if their country ever fell, if the Americans won and the American occupiers came in, they would do unspeakable things to their women and children. They drag all the men off to, you know, coal mines, factories.
Wow. I want to listen to you for days and days, but unfortunately we are out of time.
All right.
We've been talking with Dan King. His book is A Tomb Called Iwo Jima. I encourage you all out to get it. You can get it on audiobook and get it on Kindle. You can buy the actual book. I know you can go to his website and he'll actually sign the book for you.
Yes, sir.
I encourage you all to do that. Thank you very much, Dan. It was fun talking to you again and very informative.
Thanks, Dale. Appreciate it very much.
All right.
Thanks.
We'll be back. We'll be in touch. Thank you. Okay. All right. Another Veterans Radio is in the can, as they say. And coming up next week, we're going to be doing the benefits program. So make sure that you send us an email with your questions as soon as you can. And until next week, you've been listening to Veterans Radio, and you are dismissed.